Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, how to communicate with spirits, a conversation with Andy Guy. After hearing countless ghost stories about the pub that Andy Guy's brother-in-law ran, he knew he wanted to experience something for himself. Even though he would spend countless hours sitting in the most haunted areas of the pub, Andy would walk away empty-handed. However, that didn't discourage his drive to find answers. Years later, Andy would go on to find answers and create a whole new list of questions and custom equipment to try to answer them on. This is his story on The Grave Talks.
So for me, it was a lot of people have stories where they've seen something or witnessed something. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was always kind of, it started off academic. So literally when I was in secondary school, so from the age of 9 onwards, That's literally all I would take from the school library is ghost books and paranormal books. And got to the stage where I was doing that so often. I had an English teacher who was making me take out these romance novels just to try and change what I was listening and watching and reading to. But so after reading a lot of this, there's one of the books called the Osborne Book of Ghosts. Absolutely fascinated me because it was so much in there. There's so many stories and pictures and ways of ghost hunting. Mm-hmm. But the real kind of the spark and the interest to actually kind of focus into it is actually when as my sister used to be married to the landlord of a pub called the Red Lion in Southampton, Which is a really old building. It's literally 15th century, and historically it was meant to be the court for Henry V, and he tried this plot there, and these people were marched from the pub and then executed. So it was a very kind of historic building in Southampton.
Yeah.
And when I'd visit her at this pub and say that they kind of kept it as much as possible, kind of medieval, so they had suits of armor on the wall, they had flintlock muskets on the wall and daggers, and I got told the story that when they were renovating the restaurant part, they'd taken down parts of the chimney and found a skeleton in there.
Oh my God.
So it really captured my imagination, yeah. And I started hearing stories from, there was a lady called April who worked in the kitchen, and she said that every time she went into the pantry, she felt like something was touching her. And there's a lodger who was on the first floor, had a room, who wouldn't leave the room at night because there was footsteps on the staircase in front of him. And most interestingly as well is the landlord, a guy called Ian, who's my brother-in-law, said that when people were having meals in the restaurant bit, which they'd kind of renovated, some of the things would be taken off the walls. So like this flintlock musket and a little dagger, which they'd screwed to the wall, would come off the wall and land in people's ploughman's lunches. So with me and my ghost book, there was a section in there which told you like what to write on a pad and to ask people, like, where were you when you saw this, and what time was it, and what happened. And I was taking notes of all these people's stories.
Yeah.
And eventually I decided to do that as a show and tell in my junior school.
Okay.
And my my brother-in-law lent me one of these flintlock muskets and a dagger to take into school and then show everyone to tell them about the story about this ghost that was investigating in this pub.
So did you ever get a chance to go in? Did you go into the pub ever yourself? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I used to stay there with my sister on quite a few nights and Fortunately never witnessed anything myself, even though I sat on that staircase waiting for the footsteps outside the guy's room.
Yeah.
Never saw a thing there.
Nothing. All the stories, but it's almost like when you're looking too hard, you don't end up seeing it.
Mm.
Wow.
Isn't that often the truth?
It is. Yeah. Well, that's so interesting. So is there more to the story, or does that kind of sum it up what we just talked about?
That is it. So beyond that, I kept on reading more and more about the paranormal up until the age of about, I don't know, 22 or so, when my girlfriend found a ghost hunt to go to, which is Woodchester Mansion in Gloucestershire, which is a Victorian mansion, which was kind of like a country home type situation where they sort of used it as a holiday home, but it never got finished. So the entire building is a kind of a shell. And we went there, and my goal was really just to see, was there really anything to it? Was there something in the paranormal at all? And I actually had an interesting experience on that night, which was as we were walking around, because I'd kind of done a lot of work in sort of understanding the situation and watching a lot of ghost shows. I turned up my first investigation with a Mel meter and a night vision camcorder and a KG meter. Just decked out. I'd spent a lot of money for my first event. I wasn't even sure I wanted to keep doing it or not, but I'd spent a lot of money on it. And as we were leaving the building, I was walking with my camcorder. I walked past this section of the wall with a room which was sort of blocked off. And I thought I saw someone in there. And I thought, oh, we didn't go in that room. I think I might pop into that room. But as I turned my camcorder towards it, it was completely barred off, and there was just kind of piles of rubbish in there, and there was no one there. So I said, is anyone there? Is anyone watching me? Then I heard in my ears, because I was having my earphones attached to the camera, and I heard, Arthur. And I was like, okay, you just told me your name? Is your name Arthur? And nothing at all after that. But luckily, got home, checked the camera. It's clearly on there. And from that point, I thought, yeah, I think I want to go do this again. Plus, I've just spent all this money on the equipment, so I probably should.
So obviously you had the interest and the passion, and just, you know, digging into the topic and hearing other stories was very satisfying to you for a long period of time. Was that then, was that your first, like, encounter or experience with the paranormal when you heard Arthur?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I'd been interested in it, but I never actually experienced anything until that point.
Wow. Well, that's exciting. I mean, when you had that experience and you got that on tape, what's running through your mind at that moment? Are you thinking, this is truly a ghost? Are you trying to debunk it? What are you thinking?
So it was a busy night. The group I went with was a little out of control, and there was a lot of running around and screaming and shouting. So I've got a very kind of skeptical head. So I'm thinking, I heard it. I'm not sure the location, could have been someone else. So I literally kind of just left myself trying to be open about it and decided that I want to try and look into this more, see if I can witness anything in a more controlled environment to really understand if there is something, because I was still in that, is there something to it phase.
Sure.
And then later on, I changed into looking for something else.
Yeah. So you have this experience, you get this piece of evidence. Where does that, where does things continue from there for you?
So I decided to look around for a different group that's going to be a little more controlled. So I know if something happens, you know, we know it's not someone else's voice and somebody else running around, and start going to lots of other different venues. And still, I'm still very open to it, like 20 or 30 investigations into different locations. And until I hit a bit of a tipping point, I think, with the amount of different individual pieces, and then decided instead to focus on what is it. I hit a point, I think, probably at 2 or 3 years into it, where I thought, right, I've witnessed enough little things. I'm fairly sure there's something to this. I just don't know what it is. And we were in a place called Margam Castle, which is in the south of Wales. Beautiful building, a couple hundred years old. But the interesting thing is that they were using it as the set for the Da Vinci series. So they set dressed it to look like Renaissance Italy, even though it's a Welsh castle.
Okay.
So it was a little bit disconcerting when we're sitting in these rooms, which are like, okay, this was the prisoner's room, and it was lush and plush, and it had a nice four poster bed and stuff in it.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there, and I was talking to a couple of people in the group, and it was the middle of summer, so it was like August, and nothing really much was happening. We were trying lots of things, and it was just kind of dead. And someone said, isn't it funny how it's always really quiet in the summer? And I thought, you know what? That is interesting. Why is it sometimes you go to a location and it's really, there's lots of things happening, and then you go another night, nothing at all. So I started thinking, okay, let's try and pick this apart. So what I wanted to do was to look if there was any environmental condition. So anything kind of that you could record, like, you know, temperature and humidity and stuff, but also the time of day, moon cycles, times, people in the location. If there's any sort of combination of conditions which meant that something was more likely to happen or not, if that would enable it or make it easier for it to happen. Mm-hmm. So I changed from thinking, is there something to this, to more, how does this happen? And then focused everything I did on that. Which led to a bunch of new skills. So I learned how to build Arduinos and data loggers and codes and websites. Mm-hmm. And all these things to support that drive. I'm still doing that now,
years
later, just focusing on gathering as much information, trying to spot patterns.
So you were spotting patterns. So you were getting very much into the kind of the technical side of how can we understand this better? And is that accurate? Mm.
And my real goal was kind of more like how to predict.
Yeah.
How to say that when these conditions are present, mm-hmm. you're more likely to get something or not.
And tell me about that, because I've wondered about that many times. And, you know, you try and find those sort of patterns and go, well, these conditions were ripe for this. But at the same point, you know, as with all of this, well, the same thing happened over here and it was not at all those same conditions. So what have you learned over the years? What are some of the interesting things that you've come across that you maybe were surprised by?
Okay, biggest surprise.
Yeah.
Moon phases. So traditionally, you think full moon, lots of energy, you know, in sort of spiritualist traditions, which are kind of I kind of dabbled on when I was younger, but full moons is a lot of energy, or kind of the waxing phases, lots of energy building up. Mm-hmm. But when every event that occurs, we log it on a database. Mm-hmm. We also log what the moon phase was. So I can say that full moon, and there's 8 moon phases, only just under 5%, so 4.995% of events occur during a full moon.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's 2 brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.